Over 500 years ago, Christopher Columbus and his crew disembarked on a land already settled by people who had their own culture and customs. But when Columbus and many other adventurers after him came to these lands across the great sea, they did so with a culture that looked down upon non-Christians as heathens. That was surely not the first prejudice experienced on these shores, for tribes no doubt had prejudices of their own about other tribes around them. Yet all anyone ever really wants is to be treated with elementary kindness. This time of year is a good one for thinking about how we look at one another and treat one another in this complex world. Perhaps it is the complexity of the world that makes us so ready to categorize each other, thereby making it easier for us to cope with all the people, many of whom are very different from us. But what can I say on the subject that you have not heard, that might encourage you to take a look at your own life and your prejudices? Some of you are older than I am. Some may be more traveled around the country or the world. Some may have taken more personal action to combat discrimination than I have. How could I possibly know what you are dealing with in your own lives regarding racism or sexism or ageism or any disdain for people not like you? Who am I to say what prejudice another single person carries? Although I know many prejudices are carried by many people. Because of the topic, I cannot rightly use other people as examples. So I apologize for using my own life for this sermon. When I was a child born after World War II, the school I attended would present movies for students to view in our auditorium from time to time. Many were movies about the war, and besides being glad that I was a girl so that I would not have to go to war, I did not like the Japanese and the Germans for what they did. I can still see the face of the Japanese man in uniform in the cockpit of a plane, a face that seemed to be in every movie as one of the characters. As I grew older, the whites in the South terrorized the blacks and became another group I had no use for. When Lyndon Johnson became president after President Kennedy was assassinated, it was a double blow. For now a Southerner was in charge, and who knew what he would do? Just listening to him was distasteful. These three prejudices I kept with me for some time. But as life would have it, I was to face these exact three prejudices directly at some time in my life. When I went to work as a VISTA volunteer in Wichita, Kansas, it was not living in a black neighborhood that bothered me. I had my own assumptions about blacks, of course. It was 1970, and the Black is Beautiful movement was underway. So naturally, I assumed that within the black community, the darker your skin, the more status you had. But this was not true. It is still not true. But that was not my prejudice, just my ignorance. My prejudice was against being with white people in the South. Now, many people would not consider Kansas to be the South, but it was about as far south as I was going to go. After all, I came from New England, where we are enlightened, where we are not racist, where we are liberals, where many of the white people came from who rode in the on the Freedom Trail in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. and I was going to have to deal with the white power structure if I was going to get anything done while here. I did not have great expectations. As many Unitarian Universalists can attest to, progressives in the South are more active than most of us in the North. Here we tend to take our stand for granted and not to do much to further non-discrimination practices in our communities. It is not supposed to be an issue here. It is not worth spending time on. But in Kansas, I met more liberal people who were willing to stand up for what they believed in than in any other place. They used their power through their jobs, their wealth, their knowledge to help the poor, the disenfranchised, in the Native American community, in the Mexican American community, and in the poor white community. The main project I worked on was supported by the Wichita Art Museum. Think rich and white. They bought us an old Good Humor ice cream van that we used to store scroungables in and supplies for painting and other arts. We took the Wham van to three locations every week to help children from the black community, the poor white community, and girls in a detention home to express themselves and escape some of the oppression they felt. When we left, Wichita State University took over the operation and funding of the program. In keeping with the lesson of the poem that was our reading today, Kindness, by Naomi Shihab Nye, the faculty and staff of the university had learned something about elementary kindness after loss, when half of the football team and several staff members of the university, totaling 31 people, were killed in a plane crash in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado that October 2nd on their way to a game in Logan, Utah. Such a grave loss teaches us that we must do what we can while we have a chance. My ideas about white people in the South changed through experience and my willingness to see what was right in front of me. A few years later, I moved to central Pennsylvania, a rural area of beautiful rolling hills and picturesque valleys. I had been living in my home area of Fitchburg-Leominster, and was unsure if I would like such a rural area. But my first visit sold me on the friendliness of the people. What I was not aware of when I moved there was that most of the people in the area were German Americans, also called Pennsylvania Dutch, from the German Deutsch. While the cosmopolitan nature of the borough of Lewisburg was due primarily to the staff and students at Bucknell University and our own staff at the CETA Council of Governments, it was the farmers, the businessmen, the storekeepers, the mechanics, the healthcare personnel, and the workers at Pennsylvania House Furniture and the Northeastern United States Penitentiary who made strangers feel at home. Although the German people were very family-oriented, they were the friendliest people I have ever met, and the feel of the community was very much what I had experienced in the 50s growing up. People trusted one another, which was quickly becoming a characteristic of the past. One of my duties in recruiting physicians to the area to staff our health centers was to develop a brochure for physicians in residency programs. I recall writing about how drivers would let one out of the angled parking places along Market Street, which is the main street in most Pennsylvania towns, And to my amazement, they did not take the parking place. They were just being considerate. When I brought an old black and white TV to be fixed, the repairman gave me a color TV as a loaner without asking for any identification. During recovery from Tropical Storm Eloise in September of 1975, people came out of the woodwork to help one another. Their kindnesses to one another were more than elementary. My boyfriend at the time was Jewish. In a mostly German-American community, I anticipated that this would have been a problem for him. But Friday evening services were available at the university, and I never encountered anyone making any derogatory comments. Whatever negative feelings I had had about Germans were totally dissipated soon after I arrived in that community and never returned. At the age of 50, I became a mother when my partner Skip and I were allowed to be parents for a year through the American Field Service Student Exchange Program. He had done this before and knew what to expect. We went to a meeting at our church where there were photos and writings from students from around the world who were interested in coming to Cape Cod. At first, I favored a Norwegian girl, but she was allergic to dogs, and we had Russell, our black lab. Our friend Carol, who was the area representative for AFS, had earlier told us that she wanted someone in Barnstable to take a Japanese girl who would be a tennis player because Carol's husband was a coach at the high school and an avid tennis player himself. So we chose Adi Koyama, in spite of my leftover feelings because of World War II. She was a charming girl, a perfect match for us, with her patience and independence. Skip had become blind from glaucoma, and whenever we were about to go somewhere, there was considerable lag time between the announcement that we were leaving and the time we eventually got into the van. But Adi would patiently sit in the back seat and listen to music on her CD player. She bonded with Russell, with whom there was no language barrier, as she gently stroked his face with her delicate fingers. We traveled a great deal, showing her the beauty of New England, the historical sites of Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., and Williamsburg, and even the Arizona Memorial at Pearl Harbor. She was an excellent tennis player, and her team won the regional championship. The Barnstable High School band, in which she was a color guard, won 19 out of 20 trophies in Williamsburg. She was the best envoy of goodwill from Japan, and she has been back to visit me 7 times. When I think of all I could have missed that we have shared and continue to share, if I had not been able to face my prejudice and throw it away, I feel grateful that life handed me the challenge. Life surely is strange. Some would say that no one knows God's reasons. I do not think God had anything to do with it, but I appreciate that I have had so many life experiences that have allowed me to look at my prejudices squarely in the face. I am sure that I still have other ideas that need to be revised, and I'm sure they'll get their comeuppance. When I think of the Columbus story, I find it in stark contrast to a scene in the movie The Milagro Beanfield War. The northern New Mexico town is being taken over by a golfing resort, and people are rising up to fight it. The oldest man in town, Amarante, is injured, and an NYU student who's on a six-month grant to study indigenous people of the Southwest has come to know Amarante. At first amazed at the man's spirituality, he takes a different view and tries to do his best to follow Amarante's approach to prayer. He lights many candles on an altar to a saint, makes tacos, pours the saint a beer, and kneels and apologetically asks the saint to help Amarante. It is a very touching scene. Rather than see his neighbor as strange and in need of correction in his religious practices, the student honors his friend. I encourage you to take a look at your own life. What ideas have you had to change to make sense of the world? Do you still find yourself judging other people before you know them? Are there things you do or do not do because we do not do such and such? Have those times that you have had to rethink your preconceived notions been a blessing for you? Have they allowed you to grow your heart to include more and more people? Friends, my wish for you is that life will continue to show us, and we will be willing to notice when we are being less than what we could be, when we forget our first principle of loving one another, when we are being less than kind to others, all of whom, like us, just want some elementary kindness in our daily lives.